And we're up. Hey, now.
We're up. Now the magic is going to happen.
This is where it happens, all of it. All the magic.
I mean, it's just nothing but pure genius from here on out.
Oh, my God. Forget about it. This is you're going to tell your kids and your grandkids about this.
That's right. I mean, we are going to fucking bring it. Not a single joke is going to bomb or not work or have an awkward silence following it.
That's right. Dude, it's going to be nothing but pure gold, Jerry. Pure, yep. Pure raw uncut gold.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep. Yep.
Jake's from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
How you doing, John? How's the days after the election? How's the quarantine hitting you? What's going on, man?
Oh, you know, I mean, quarantine life and the living is monotonous and depressing.
Basically, yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of, I mean, I don't go home for Thanksgiving. My family's not in the area and, you know, it's not practical to fly or drive down somewhere for a one day holiday thing, unless it's like a big thing like Christmas. So, yeah. So like a lot of Thanksgivings, I would get together with friends and stuff, but that's not really an option this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, not always, but I usually meet up with my folks for Thanksgiving, and, like, again, that's not an option this year, unless we do, like, some type of outdoor Charlie Brown type of Thanksgiving, where we're all just, like, you know, sitting on a picnic table outside or whatever.
Right, and even popcorn and...
Yes, popcorn and toast.
Yes.
served by a beagle and his friendly canary friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like that, like Thanksgiving.
Yeah, actually, that doesn't sound bad.
Yeah, if we could train our beagle to cook all that in service.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind having that happen.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an idea. We'll pencil that in for Thursday.
Yeah. So there we go. Popcorn and toast. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yay! We saw Thanksgiving.
We did it.
Yeah.
And also, no new episode of SNL. We're in the second off week, and I'm assuming next week's going to be another off week because it's Thanksgiving weekend. So
yeah, it's a holiday. They don't typically do a new show on a holiday. I mean, unless it's something like Halloween or something like, which they did this year. We had a show that was actually on Halloween, but yeah, for big things like Thanksgiving or Christmas, yeah, typically no new SNL.
Right. So in order to get our SNL fixed, we were like, hey, let's go back and do what we used to do back in ye olden days of this past summer, where we just watched like an SNL movie with some SNL characters in it.
Yeah, and you had a really interesting suggestion for this week. This was a movie I had not heard of until you sent me the trailer, and you were like, hey, there's this movie that exists, and it's about stand-up, and it actually stars Alex Moffat from SNL, who you may know.
Yeah, you might know him, you might know him. Yeah, so this movie, it was like a really kind of low-key, low-budget indie film. It's called The Opening Act. Came out last month in October.
Yeah.
It was written and directed by Steve Byrne, who most of you know is a famous stand-up comedian.
Uh-huh.
And I chose this movie for a few reasons. Like, A, it's a newer movie, which we haven't talked about a new movie in a while. I think like the last new movie we talked about was probably Palm Springs.
Staten Island. I think we did King of Staten Island after Palm Springs, but...
Oh, okay. I thought Staten Island was before, but you might be right.
I have to go check, but yeah.
Check the files, the portfolio.
Yeah.
Got it. So it's a newer movie, A. B, it has some SNL characters in it. Some, the one most prominently featured, Mr. Alex Moffat.
Mm-hmm.
And C, this is all about the world of stand-up comedy, a world that you and I both know pretty well. And, because we are SNL nerds, but we're also stand-up comedy nerds. Have you ever talked about, like, our stand-up, our love of stand-up comedy, like what got us into it and like who are our favorite comedians now and all that jazz?
I mean, we've peppered some stuff in here and there, I think. Yeah, if you want to talk about your stand-up comedy background, I'm not going to stop you, sir.
All right. Don't stop me now. See what I did there? You're welcome, everybody.
Yeah, that was a Queen song. That was...
Yes, yeah. I'm a laugh riot.
That was very clever. That you threw in a reference to.
I'm very clever. I'm very quick on my feet. I'm the new comedic voice of a generation. As far as stand-up comedy goes, like, I've been a real nerd about it probably since... I'm going to say junior high, like ever since, like one of my earliest memories of it is getting Eddie Murphy's Delirious on cassette. It was back when it's called Eddie Murphy Comedian, but it's like basically his Delirious set. And like I was listening to it on a class trip. I think it was our senior class trip in junior high. We went to like the Air and Space Museum in D.C. And I still remember this to this day. Like, on the way back, we were listening to it, but because we spent the whole day out there, we were driving back from D.C. to New York. Like, everybody was kind of tired, and mostly everybody on the bus was sleeping, except for me. I was still awake. And, like, I remember listening to his act, thinking it was, like, the funniest laugh-out-loud thing I'd ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't laugh out loud because the whole bus was sleeping. I don't want to be, like, the one lone maniac just laughing at, you know, the cookout joke or the... ice cream truck joke or all this classic material. So I had to like hold in my laughter and stifle it while I was listening to all this amazing stuff. And like, ever since then, I was just like a nerd over stand-up comedy. And, you know, then I listened to like other comedians like Jon Stewart, Patton Oswalt. I'm a huge Greg Giraldo fan. I love Patrice O'Neill, of course. Wyatt Cenac. I just became like obsessed with it. I was recording HBO stand-up comedy specials on VHS and just like watching it over and over. I mean, I didn't even think about doing stand-up. Like, I wasn't watching all these videos to become stand-up. I just watched it just because I really enjoyed stand-up. I really enjoyed the craft and art of it. Thus began my love of stand-up, and then I started to do it in my 30s, and here we are now.
Yeah, and it's just been a rocket to the stratosphere ever since, right?
That's right. Talking to you through a laptop in my bedroom. It's the highest of highs.
It's all coming together.
That's right. This is exactly what I dreamed of when I was a little kid.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a similar kind of thing. My folks, we had like a few stand-up comedy albums. The one I really remember that made a big impact on me was Bill Cosby's album. And it was an album of his from, I think, the 60s. Probably around his I Spy days, called Bill Cosby is a Very Funny Fellow, Right? And it had one of his classic routines about Noah on there. And I also responded to it because it had a brief routine about Superman changing in a phone booth. I listened to that a lot. And I actually lived in Washington, D.C. when I was a kid. And so I went to the Air and Space Museum many a time. I have many fond memories there.
Nice.
I wonder if we were ever there on the same day.
Maybe we were there. Sliding doors, man.
Yeah.
Sliding doors.
Yeah. And I had a continued love of stand-up going into adulthood. And I'm a fan of many of the guys that you mentioned, like Patton Oswalt and Louis C.K., who I unfortunately... can't really bring myself to listen to much anymore. Todd Barry. I mean, so many others. And like for a while in the early 2000s, my late friend Frankie and I, we would go into the city on a pretty much a weekly basis to go see a comedy show in the East Village called Invite Them Up. That was run and co-hosted by Bobby Tisdale and Eugene Merman, who were both...
Oh.
They're both better known now. This was like before Eugene had even done Bob's Burgers. And you got to see a lot of cool stand-ups there, like in the kind of the alternative New York comedy scene. And
where was that at? Like, there was like a couple of venues that I like whenever I listen to like comedy podcasts, like there's a couple of venues in New York that like they talk about that aren't there anymore.
This was at a bar called Rafifi, which I think is closed. I'm honestly not sure if it closed or not. I mean, I haven't been there in years. Invite Them Up came to an end a number of years ago. But they do have occasional reunion shows. So,
right. I remember hearing about Rafifi's on like some podcast. Like I remember like Kumail Nanjiani talking about it, mm-hmm. and like Pete Holmes and Mark Maron would talk about it. Like the name Rafifi's definitely rings a bell. But again, it's like one of those places like I've heard about, but even though I was in New York for some reason, I just never went, or it just kind of escaped me. Which
I mean, I don't know if I would have gone to the trouble of going every week if it hadn't been for Frank. I mean, he was a good motivator to do that. But we had a blast there. We would usually be on the front row of every show we could. Our attendance became a little more sporadic later on. They did release a three CD album. So it's a good representation of like the people you would hear at the show and the kind of comedy that you would see there. And yeah, there's some really great stuff.
Oh, I got to find that. Rafif is what's it called?
The three disc album is just called Invite Them Up.
I'm looking that up right now as we speak.
Okay, I'm sure you can find it on iTunes or whatever. Or, you know, if you look for a physical copy, I'm sure you could find one on eBay or something. So, free plug for the Invite Them Up guys.
Oh, yeah, here it is. I never heard about this. Oh, wow. All right. Weekend made. Thank you, sir.
There you go. So, and then like you, I got into stand-up comedy in, like, actually performing stand-up comedy in my late 30s. I kind of eased into it. I had started out doing community theater. Then I transitioned from that into doing improv. And then I transitioned from that into doing stand-up comedy. It just was sort of a gradual process of like, well, gee, can I be funny? Can I be funny by myself? Can I be funny professionally? And it's something I love doing. Back in the time when people could still gather in public places.
Remember those days?
Vaguely at this point. I mean, you know, it'll be nice to get back to you someday.
It would be. It would be nice to see you. Like, for the listeners, I haven't seen Trumbull, like, face-to-face since March. So, like, it would be nice to see you again, my friend.
It would be, right?
Yeah, right.
And I mean, honestly, at this point, it would feel like I'd be starting over from scratch.
I'd have to introduce myself all over again to you.
Well, no, I mean, doing stand-up, it would feel like I'm starting over from scratch, because it's like...
Oh, right. I'll write that.
You know, I hadn't really been practicing my bits or anything. I would really have to run through stuff again, even for like old bits that I've done for ages.
The last time I did stand up, I mean, luckily I was on Donna V's show a couple months ago, mm-hmm. and I had the same feeling where I was like I hadn't, like after, before Donna V's show, I hadn't done stand up since like January or February.
Yeah.
So part of me was thinking, can I even do this anymore? Do I even remember how these jokes go? Mm-hmm. But honestly, it's like a reflex. Like once I started a joke, I just kind of instinctively just kind of knew how it ended. I was like, oh yeah, this ends like this. Oh yeah, this joke goes like this.
Muscle memory. Like,
Like it's like one of those things. Like once you do it, like the engine starts firing up again, and you just can like finish it like that.
And you know what? That's to kind of bring it back to our topic for today. That's something I thought this movie captured well, which is that a lot of stand-up is repetition. You are doing the same act over and over and over, or the same jokes in different orders. But there is a fair amount of repetition and a fair amount of development in any stand-up act. And a lot of times in movie and TV depictions, they show stand-up is like, oh, you're thinking it up on the spot, or you're doing these jokes you've never done before. But a lot of stand-up is not like that. It's really you developing and crafting a joke until it's something like you know or at least reasonably confident is going to work, and then you do that over and over and over until you're really sick of it performing it.
Yeah, I mean, I did enjoy how in the movie they did sort of focus on that, how, like you said, like, because a lot of people just think, like, stand-up is just you up there just talking and saying whatever comes to your mind.
Yeah.
I mean, for some people, it's like that.
Yeah, there are absolutely stand-ups like that. Like, one of my favorite comedians, the late, great Bill Hicks, he starts out one of his albums, he just comes out and he says, like, oh, no, wait, no, I'm sorry, this is Todd Barry. Todd Barry starts out one of his albums saying, like, I'm going to do a set of really old shit I'm tired of, mixed up with stuff that's too new to be performed. I always
be a great
line, and there is something to that. Yeah,
sounds like a fantastic show.
Hey, it's his first album, Medium Energy. Really good stuff. I highly recommend it.
All right, yeah, check it out, guys. Wow, you got all these albums that you're recommending.
Well, I mean, I'm a comedy geek, man. I mean, if you look at my iTunes, there are a ton of comedy albums on there. I haven't bought as many lately. I need to keep up a little more. But
yeah, I mean, there's a ton of stuff out there. But yeah, like, I mean, definitely, guys, go out, support, you know, your local comic who has an album out, especially in these times where comics are able to, like, you know, do stand up like they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and support a comedian while they need it in these lean and troubled times.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like, every stand up comic, you know, their income was just slashed very unexpectedly. So it's been a tough year for comedians and actors and, you know, so many live performers.
Yeah, no, the arts took a hit. So yeah, go out and support. Help out a brother.
But one thing you can still do in pandemic time is watch a movie at home. Like today's movie, The Opening Act, written and directed by Steve Byrne. And it is out on Amazon Prime. And it's a very reasonable $6.99 to rent.
Yeah, it's an affordable movie. It's a good, it's just 90 minutes. Nice, not too long, not too short. Nice and right. All right, so yeah, let's talk about this movie. Let's get into it.
I mean, our protagonist of the movie is a fellow by the name of Will Chu. He's this young comedian in his 20s. He's played by actual stand-up comedian Jimmy O. Yang.
Right, you might know Jimmy O. Yang. He was in you know, from Crazy Rich Asians. He was also in, of course, Silicon Valley, and he's in the new Netflix show Space Force.
Yeah. So he's got a pretty good career. I haven't, I never got around to seeing Crazy Rich Asians and still haven't seen Silicon Valley. So I wasn't ultra familiar with Jimmy O. Yang, but I knew his face, you know, and I've probably seen a set from him at some time or another.
Okay. He's funny. He's a good dude. I also liked how this movie opened because it kind of encapsulates who this guy is in like a few minutes. And it does it in a way where like no dialogue is spoken. It's very much like the, you know, that one scene in the first 15 minutes of the movie Up.
Yeah.
Where it kind of explains who he is. Like one of the first scenes is you see an Asian couple holding a baby and the dad is popping in a video of Jim Gaffigan's old stand-up from like the 80s. And it's Jim Gaffigan's actual stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and they show Wanda Sykes' old stand-up from the 80s and then Brian Regan's old stand-up. And then they cut to the kid, you know, kind of growing up and being a little bit older. Then it cuts to the kid's mom being visited by the doctor. Then they cut to like some more comedy clips. And then they cut to the kid, the Asian kid, like about, you know, maybe 9 or 10, being dressed all in black in a black suit, surrounded by other people dressed all in black.
Yeah, and then it's obviously the aftermath of a funeral.
Exactly. And then they cut to the father and the son kind of bonding over stand-up comedy. You know, they're watching Margaret Cho, Sebastian Maniscalco, and it's all actual footage of all these stand-up comedians' old sets.
Mm-hmm.
Then they cut to the kid being a little bit older, kind of mimicking and miming being a stand-up comedian in front of a mirror. You know, trying to tell jokes to make his dad laugh because his dad's, you know, kind of course, lost his wife, so he's going through it. But again, no dialogue is spoken. It's all action.
Outside of the clips of stand-up, yeah.
Right.
And we also see somebody else from Saturday Night Live in this montage. We see Colin Jost, a little of his stand-up act, and he talks about how Will.i.am is just the name William with dots in it.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I forgot what stand-up special that was. I forgot he did a stand-up special, to be honest. I was like, oh, yeah, he did that.
Yeah, and I was like, Oh, and the Colin Jost joke they show wasn't one I liked too much. Okay, on brand.
Oh, Jost.
Oh, Jost. But, I mean, no. I mean, you show any big mix of stand-up comics, you're going to love some jokes, you're going to hate some jokes, you're going to be eh on some jokes. And there are some other people I'm eh on. Like, I found I'm kind of eh on Margaret Cho, quite frankly.
Yeah, I remember liking her better back in the day, but yeah, I'm sure if I go back on it now, I'm like, I don't know if this holds up as much as I thought it did back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I was like really doing a deep dive into stand-up comedy, this would probably be the early 2000s, I bought a Margaret Cho album. I didn't know her that well, and I was like, oh, I'll try this. And, oh, I just hated it. I ended up returning the album. Or exchanging it for something else. I think that's the only stand-up comedy album I've ever done that with.
Oh boy!
But
she's not everybody's cup of tea. She's a very she
not my cup of tea. Absolutely.
Yeah. But it happens sometimes. Like some people don't like Marc Maron's. I like Marc Maron's comedy, but some of my friends are like, yeah, I don't get him.
Yeah,
it happens.
And it happens. You're not going to love everybody, and that's the beauty of stand-up comic and comedy in a way.
Yeah.
So
people love Gabriel Iglesias or whoever, and I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah. And this movie, it has a lot of stand-up comics in it. And most every major role in the movie is played by a stand-up comic. So I thought that was interesting, and I thought that was amusing because it's like so many of these people I recognize. So at times it was a little tough to suspend my disbelief.
Yeah, like, I was like, that's Roy Wood Jr., stop.
Exactly. I mean, after this opening montage, we cut to Will Chu as a young adult in his, somewhere in his early 20s, and he's got a day job. He works at an insurance agency in just a cubicle, but he works in this insurance office that apparently only employs comedians, because his boss is played by Bill Burr, and the guy at the cubicle next to him is Roy Wood Jr.
I was really hoping there'd be a scene where, like, Will Chu would go to the copy machine and, like, Rob Schneider would be there.
Right. Or, you know, next cubicle over, there's Richard Lewis. Or
making cupcakes.
But, I mean, so he's this young, struggling comic, and he's got a day job, as many comedians do, whether they talk about it in their acts or not. Yeah, they're... I mean, if you're somebody who's doing comedy full time, you really are living the dream, even if you're not like a nationally known name, because most comics are people who they have to have a day job to pay the bills, and they do comedy on the side.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But they let you know that this isn't his dream. He's just doing this to get by, because his real love is stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. It's a thing him and his father bonded over. And of course, also in the montage, I don't know if you mentioned it, we also learned that his father died too. Because like at the very last scene, he's wearing like a black suit like he did when he was a kid. So like,
you know, honestly, I missed that in the montage. I didn't really get that his father died too, because like he mentions it in his act towards the end of the movie. But I didn't get that in the opening montage. I'd have to like rewatch that, I think, to really get that.
Yeah. I did. Yeah, they were kind of unclear about that. The only reason I thought that his father might have died is because he wasn't brought back in at all in the movie. And like it, like I said, that one scene he was wearing a black suit with, you know, with a white shirt, which is, you know, standard funeral attire.
Yeah.
So that made me think, oh, is his dad dead too? And so, but they never bring it up until the end. Yeah, that could have been cleared up a little bit.
Yeah, honestly, that went right over my head. And that's fine. It's not a fatal flaw.
Right.
I personally missed. Maybe I was taking a note during that moment.
Right. But if you blinked, you could have missed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, but Will Chu, you know, he has this day job, but he also does this comedy night a few nights a week. He goes to like a local bar, and he does what are called bringer shows. And if you're not a comedian and you don't know what a bringer show is, it's kind of in the name. It's like where to get stage time. You have to bring audience members who will pay for usually like a drink or, you know, like a two item minimum or something like that.
Yeah. Like, this is the first thing that kind of threw me, because like, I didn't know if it was an open mic or a bringer. I mean, they kept mentioning like, oh, you got to bring in people for stage time. And then part of me was like, well, this is a bar and grill.
Yeah.
It's called Mickey's Bar and Grill. It was owned by another comedian, Kathleen Madigan, who plays the owner, who was like saying, yeah, you got to bring in people for the stage time. And like part of me was like, oh, I thought bringer shows were only for like comedy clubs. I didn't know you could do that for like a bar show.
You know, they do them at bar shows too. Yeah. I mean, it's basically like, for people who may not be familiar, it's like kind of like the bottom tier of comedy where you have to do a bringer show and you have to basically impose upon your friends and family to like, hey, come see me. And it's kind of a tough thing because you're doing this in your first few years of comedy and it's when you're most likely not very good at it quite yet. So.
Right. And then, and a lot, of course, a lot of times your friends, like after they see you once, they're not going to come back again. Right. They're like, well, do you have any new jokes? Are you going to tell the same stuff I heard before? I got to get a sitter. And it's like a whole thing. So you kind of run through your friends pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you kind of, after you've been doing comedy for like 2 or 3 years, you know what you're doing a little more and you want to go back to all those friends and be like, hey, could you come see me again? I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah, exactly. You want your friends to see you when you're more, you know, tuned in and honed to your craft. To bring in your friends to see you at an open mic is like basically having your friends come see you like tune your guitar up or like, you know, or like rehearse and not actually play.
Yeah, yeah. It's like vaudeville. It's a place where you kind of like work towards being good. So yeah, but if you have a friend who comes out to see you at a show or a bar show or something like that, that's a good friend and treasure that friend.
Absolutely. Oh, we also mentioned like the show. So the movie takes place in Steubenville, Ohio, which I guess the Ohio thing comes into play later, which we'll find out.
Yeah, and he wants to audition at the Comedy Cellar. We see him at his day job, and he's like calling the Comedy Cellar, which is a big famous stand up club, and they're like, well, you can only audition if you're recommended by two of our regulars.
A thing.
And so it's that sort of catch 22. He can't really get stage time without credits, but you can't really get credits without stage time. So he's kind of in this place where he is.
You can't get the job without experience, but in order to get the experience, you need a job.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, it's like anything. You don't really get anywhere until somebody takes a chance on you.
Right. So he's basically, you know, kind of trying to hone his craft, kind of, you know, work his chops at this this bar show called Mickey's. And I don't know if you saw it, but really quickly, I noticed that the host of that bar show, Punky Johnson.
I saw Punky Johnson in the closing credits, and I was like, wow, I totally missed Punky Johnson. But she apparently plays an MC.
Yeah, like she's like in the background. Like you can see her, but she's kind of blurry. It's like literally like a blink and you'll miss it type of thing. But like once I saw her in that one scene where like, cause she always wears like her backwards baseball cap. Uh-huh. I was like, I think that's Punky. And sure enough, it was.
That's cool. And like another one of the comedians that we see that Will is friendly with is played by Ken Jeong of The Hangover and Community fame. And Ken Jeong, if you don't know, he is also a stand-up. I watched his Netflix special recently, I Love You Ho, and it's pretty good.
All right, nice.
He's a funny guy. He's got a lot of energy, you know, and you see him, he's kind of adapting his stand-up act for playing this struggling comedian.
Absolutely, yeah. So Ken Jeong's character in Will Chu have like become very buddy-buddy and like, you know, Ken Jeong's character plays this character Quinn. Mm-hmm. So Quinn is always telling Will, hey, if I hear of anything, I'll let you know. Like they have a good connection together.
Yeah. And it's almost like a mentor mentee relationship but you know, it's, if you're buddies with a comedian, you look out for each other, you tip each other off for gigs and things like that. It really is. I mean, it's a small community. At one point, Quinn compares it to figure skating. He's like, it's like the world of figure skating. It's, you know, word gets around.
And it really is.
And at one point, Will is at his day job at the insurance agency, and he gets a text from Quinn just saying, like, call me right now. And he gets these urgent texts. And so he calls him up, and Quinn says, like, hey, I got this other gig, so now I can't do this weekend gig I was going to do, emceeing at the Philadelphia Improv. And they asked me if I could recommend somebody to take over, and I gave them your name.
Yeah, and I think Will says, well, I don't know. It's weird because he says, I don't know if I'm ready. He seems kind of scared. Mm-hmm. But it's weird how he said, I don't know if I'm ready. But he, but just before that, he was like trying to get auditions for The Cellar. I was like, if you're like, that was weird.
Well, I mean, he's hungry, so he wants the success. But when an opportunity actually presents itself to him, he's naturally scared, and he's like, oh, gee, I don't know if I'm ready for this. Because it's scary when you're going to take a next step, a big step in your career.
That is true.
And Quinn says, like, you know, hey, look, this is a really good opportunity. If you do this and you do well, this club owner is very connected, and he owns, like, other clubs, and he can put you on lots of other shows. So it's basically an opportunity to potentially become like a full-time comedian, or at least a touring comedian.
So, yeah, or at least an MC at the very least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Quinn says, you know, he's like, hey, you know, like, comedy is your dream. And like, even on my worst day of doing comedy, I thank God I'm not selling anyone a 2012 Kia Sorento.
That was very specific.
Very specific. Made me wonder if Steve Byrne had ever been had a day job selling Kia Sorentos.
Somewhere there's like a Kia dealership that Steve Byrne used to work at, and they're watching that, and they're like, hey, man, what the fuck?
Yeah, that line hit home.
Kia's are good cars. What's
yeah. Will goes into his boss's office. He goes into Bill Burr's office, and he's like, and he's good at his day job. He like gets through this, all the insurance for this 6-car pileup. And he's like, hey, since I did a nice job on this, I'm going to take tomorrow off, because he needs the time off of his day job so he can go do the gig at the Philly Improv. And Bill Burr, you know, being an asshole boss, he's just like, no, you can't do that. No. No. So Will ends up quitting his job.
Yeah. He just quits on the spot, and like, he goes out to live his dream, man.
Yeah.
And so,
big leap of faith.
Yeah. That's a big step. I mean, I don't know if I would do that. But then again, he has like, you know, youth on his side, and he's like, yeah, I'll just, mm-hmm. If I fail, I fail. If I make it, I make it. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, he also has a very supportive girlfriend who's an elementary school teacher, and she's very supportive of his dream and stuff. So he could probably lean on her if times get tough.
Yes, exactly. When stuff gets lean, just talk to your lady. Be like, hey, can you slide me a few buckaroos? Maybe. Follow my dream here.
Yeah, so he quits the job to take this weekend gig, and he's going to be the MC of the show, the, you know, the master ceremony. So, like, in stand-up comedy, again, I'm going to try and just explain this for anyone who's not familiar with the world of stand-up comedy. You got the MC, who's the guy who introduces all the comedians, and you see him periodically throughout the night. Or her. Women can do MCs, too.
That's right. We're open. We're
2020. Women can be MCs, too.
That's right.
And then you have the feature, who is basically the middle comic, who does like a little more time than the MC does. Like the MC would do like, say, 12 minutes. The feature will do like 20, 25. And then you have your headliner, who can do anywhere from 45 to over an hour.
Right. But I mean, the MC job is actually pretty important, because it's like their job to really warm up the crowd, break the ice, you know, just like,
and keep the show moving.
Yeah, keep the show moving, ingratiate everybody, and like, they're like, it's on them to like really make sure, like, you know, keep all the ducks in a row, as it were.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen good MCs and we've seen bad MCs, and it really does make a difference. It really does, you know, help with the audience energy and keeps the show moving. And I mean, there is an art to it. I mean, like, if somebody gets up there and just kills, you don't necessarily want to do like 5 minutes of your own stuff right after that. You want to keep it moving and just, you know, go on to the next person so they can feed off that energy.
Right. Like the MC sets the tone of the entire show.
Right.
So if the MC is good and high energy, then the whole show is going to be good and high energy.
Yeah. Like and conversely, if you have a comedian who didn't do so hot, it's your job to kind of get the crowd back and get the crowd pumped for the next comic.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so the MC, it sounds like it's not that important a job, but trust me, it's a big deal. It might be the most important job.
It's a tricky thing. Yeah.
All right. So, our hero, Will Chu, drives out to Pennsylvania, goes to the Pennsylvania Improv. Of course, he notices on the marquee they spell his name wrong. They spell it C-H-E-W, like chew your food, but his last name is spelled C-H-U.
Yeah.
He goes
inside, and he sees the doorman, who's played by Alonzo Bowden, another stand-up comedian. He's been on what's the NPR game show a lot?
Ask Me Another.
Maybe it is. I'm blanking on the name of it. But he's been on that. He's been on Last Comic Standing. Hilarious guy. I think he won Last Comic Standing, if I remember correctly.
He might be. He's a big deal in L.A.
Yeah,
not just L.A. He's a big deal everywhere. I don't want Alonzo to come after me.
I'm gonna look him up. Everywhere, Alonzo. Yeah, I can't remember the name of that NPR show now, and it's driving me nuts. Give me just a second.
Okay. All right. Well, so Alonzo says, "Oh yeah, I'll get right on that," very sarcastically to when Will Chu says, "Hey, my name's misspelled in a marquee," and he's like, "Oh yeah, okay, I'll get right on that. Let me get the manager." Calls in the manager of the club, named Chip, played by Neil Brennan.
Neil Brennan, co-creator of Chappelle Show, great stand-up in his own right. He's got a special Three Mics. I think that's on Netflix. It's really good.
Yeah, the Three Mics specials. I really like that one. That was an interesting concept. I dug that one a lot.
Yeah, highly recommend. It is Wait, Don't Tell Me that Alonzo Bowden is on. I was thinking that was wrong, but okay. So he's on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
All right, so guys, check that out.
Mm-hmm.
So Chip, the manager, is kind of, there's like a weird energy that Chip is giving Will off the bat. I don't know if Chip is like hitting, you don't know if he's hitting on Will or whatever, but it's a very odd energy. And he basically, gets his phone number and he says, yeah, you're going to be at the comedy condo.
Yeah.
You'll be staying there and you'll be sharing it with our middle act, Chris Palmer. And he said, "Yeah, Chris. He's a bit of a wild boy, bit of a party dude. So if anything gets too weird, you call me. You can stay at my place, and just go over there and say hi to him and all that jazz." So he goes over to the comedy condo. Like, for those who don't know, the comedy condo is usually an apartment that the comedy clubs have where they let the touring and visiting comics stay. And 9 times out of 10, the comedy condo is a bit skeevy, from what I've heard. I've heard stories.
Yeah, I mean, neither one of us is on that level where we're like real familiar with comedy condos, because that's something that like is part of the life of a touring comedian. Which, unfortunately, neither one of us has gotten to that level. But
someday.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, I liked Neil Brennan's performance in this movie. He was kind of just very no nonsense. He was just like very like, okay, this is how it is.
I dug it.
And he just lets Will know early on, like, yeah, you're on thin ice. Don't screw up too much. Will does screw up a few times because he's young and there's a lot that he does not know.
Oh, we'll get to that. So Will goes to the comedy condo. He sees the middle act that he's sharing the place with, Chris Palmer, played by one Alex Moffat.
Yeah.
And I really liked Alex in this role.
Alex was really good in this role. The Chris Palmer, the character he's playing, obviously a talented comedian. And he's also nice, and he takes Will under his wing a little bit and kind of shows him the ropes of the life of a touring comic. But he's also, you know, kind of a party boy, a bit of a train wreck.
Yeah, he's like one of those comics who, like, you can tell really, like, loves the girls and the sex and the drinking part mm-hmm. of comedy more than the actual craft of comedy.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, he's kind of like, you know, seen it all. He's been a feature for a long time, and he's very comfortable where he is. And, you know, he's always, like, happy to see Will. He's like, hey, there's the guy.
Yeah. And
he's already taken, like, the nice bedroom in the condo, which looks like a high-end hotel room. And he's like, hey, you can take the other bedroom, which is, like, a mattress on the floor. And it looks like the worst first apartment out of college that you've ever seen in your life.
Like a squatter's home.
Yes. Yes.
And I think at one point he says, hey, don't use the shampoo. I heard some other comics, like, jizzed in there as, like, a joke. Which, ew.
Yeah, but I totally believe that that is a thing, because that is a thing that comics would find funny.
I mean, it is kind of funny, but still.
Yeah, yeah, it's yeah, they like the college type pranks. Yeah. There was something about Alex Moffat's delivery that, in a weird way, really reminded me of K.P. Burke.
Really?
There was something in his manner. I mean, it's not like a one-to-one thing, but I was just like, he kind of reminds me of KP. And KP was on our Bill Burr episode a month or two back. But I was like, I get a vibe from him. Like, it kind of reminds me of KP in a good way. Like
he's very KP Bird-esque. Yeah. I gotta watch now. I gotta rewatch this with new eyes and see if I see what you see.
Yeah, I don't know. But so then the movie for the next while it traces through the whole 4-day weekend. It starts on Thursday and goes through the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday shows, and it really shows you like how up and down the. Being a comedian can be, because you can do great one show and do horrible the next, or vice versa, and there's not necessarily a rhyme or reason to it.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get to that. So it starts off. The first show is on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Palmer and Will Chu go there to the club. They meet up with the sound guy Ricky, played by Jermaine Fowler.
Mm-hmm.
Another comic.
Yeah.
You know, he asks them, like, how do you want me to bring you up? You know, clubs and colleges line, which I thought, like, that's a very standard comedian.
When there is nothing else for them to say in an intro, they'll say, like, you've seen this guy at clubs and colleges nationwide. And it's the vaguest credit imaginable. It's the biggest BS line in standard comedy. I mean, yeah, sometimes people have played clubs and colleges. But
it's a way of pumping up your resume when you haven't done anything really huge or big to speak of.
Exactly. Nothing notable. Like, I mean, one of the first shows I ever did in New York City, the MC of the show said, like, how do you want me to bring you up? And I gave him the credits that I had at the time. And the MC just said, I'm never going to remember that. I'll just say you've been on VH1. And I just thought, I immediately thought, well, why the fuck did you ask me then? If you're not going to bother to remember, like, the two credits I gave you.
He was really hoping you'd say clubs and colleges.
Yeah, yeah. So I was like, okay, the MC can just make up credits for you whenever he feels like it. That's the thing I didn't know about comedy when I came in here tonight.
It's like, yeah, he's been on VH1, Animal Planet.
I was just like, hey, why don't we go all the way with this thing? Say that I hosted The Tonight Show for 30 years and I co-created Seinfeld. if we're going to pad my resume, let's pad it with some really impressive stuff.
Yeah, let's just go reach for the stars.
Exactly.
Clubs and colleges. If you ever hear a comedian being brought up to clubs and colleges, their resume is a little light.
Yeah, they didn't say clubs and colleges nationwide, though, which I was... That's how I usually hear it, but
right, exactly. So Will goes out. He's the MC. He's warming up the crowd. He's actually doing a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he uses the regular kind of standard lines. Okay, is anybody here single? Anybody here married? Mm-hmm. You know, which comedians do all the time. He has that one line. He says, Like, oh, wow, you know, Pennsylvania's got some beautiful women. And everybody's like, yay. And it's like, well, not in here, but like downtown.
Right.
So, yeah, he does actually a decent job. Brings up Chris, goes off stage, and he meets up with the headliner played by Cedric Entertainer, who plays Billy G, who's a
big time. We actually see Cedric the Entertainer in the opening montage of the movie. It's, you know, some stuff from Cedric's actual act. But in the world of this movie, he's a big time comedian. He's like nationally known. He had a hit television series. He's written books. And when Will introduces himself before the show, Billy G is just very like, yeah, don't do my catchphrase at me. Here's my intro. You got that? Okay.
Yeah, he has a very specific, like, way he wants to be introduced. I mentioned I was on the Tonight Show a number of times, mentioned the book that people can buy after the show, and, like, you know, mentioned this, this, and this. If you got it? And I think at one point, Will gets so flustered. He's like, right, do you have a pen? I need to write that down.
Yeah.
So, of course, Will thinks he has it in his head. Chris Palmer gets off the show, gets off the stage. Will goes up. He's like, are you ready for your headliner? Your next comedian, your headliner for the evening, he's been on shows, and he has a book out called Oh, That Billy. Give it up for Billy G!
And as
Will goes off the stage and Billy G goes on the stage, like, Billy, you know, shakes his hand and says, oh, I guess you never found that pen, did you?
Yeah. That's fun. Good line.
And as somebody who has messed up people's intros from time to time, I felt that part.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're another comedian watching from, you know, usually the back bar, and you're watching another comedian on stage screw up, especially if it's a friend of yours, there is nothing funnier.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's sick, but as a comedian, you love to see your friends bomb because it's something different.
It's like, oh, this is new. He's failing.
How's Darren going to dig himself out of this hole? Let's see.
Spoiler alert, he's not. Oh, man.
And Chris goes on as the feature. He does great. He kills, you know, because he's a polished, practiced stand-up. And then after he gets off stage, he's hanging at the back bar with Will, and he spots a couple of cute ladies in the audience, and he sends over something to their table, which we later find out is a coupon they can redeem for one free drink with the comedian. So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, you kid.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, you know, Chris is looking to score with these babes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go to a bar after this. Come hanging out with us, Will. And Will, you know, of course, being the newbie, the novice, the guy still holding on to his joke book, which is something I noticed, like, the whole time, which I kind of dug. Like, I think he brought his notebook on stage with his jokes.
He does. Oh, yeah. Don't bring your notes on stage.
Yeah. I mean, if it's an open mic or, like, a free bar show, maybe you could do that. But if it's, like, a professional show where people are paying, don't bring any notes on stage. You gotta have that.
He wasn't consulting it during his act, but he brings it on stage and he like puts it on the stool next to him, and you're just like, oh no, Will, no.
Yeah. I mean, I get it though. That's like a security blanket for him. It's like somebody who brings a drink up on stage all the time. Like you need something to feel safe. So I got it. But that's another tip. Anybody who's getting into wants to get into stand-up now during the apocalypse. When you're doing a show...
Oh, great timing. Great timing.
Yeah, this is the perfect time.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, if you're doing a show, if it's a show where people are paying, don't bring up notes, because that just looks cheesy. But if it's like a free show or an open mic, you could probably do it.
Yeah. And these are all things you just kind of learn on the way. You pick it up as you go.
Right, absolutely. All right, so Chris talks Will into meeting up for drinks with the girls afterwards. Like, he really wants him to be his wingman.
Mm-hmm.
So although Will wants to just go back home and rest and,
Because they've set up a radio appearance for the next morning. The club owner said, like, hey, you're going to get up at 7 and you're going to be on this Morning Zoo radio show to promote your appearances there this weekend. And Will is allowed to tag along with Chris on that. Now, as the headliner, Billy G does not have to do that sort of thing. So,
right, exactly.
So it's a place where you can really clearly see the hierarchy involved. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a good way. It's a great point. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So I think it's one of the things like where Will kind of reluctantly goes to the bar and meets up with Chris and the ladies, and then they hang out. I think Chris just says, "Yeah, I'm hooking up with this girl. Just hang out with her friend, and make sure she's cool, so I can like mac on her friend.
And, be a wingman for me." And Will's like, he's very quick to say, like, "Hey, I've got a girlfriend. I'm not going to do anything this late." And he's like resisting her advances. Like she tries to kiss him, and he's like, "Oh no, I can't do that." And then she's like, and then she escalates. She goes for the crotch. Which, bold move, drunk lady.
Hey, I know. Hey, now that is no means no, ma'am.
But eventually, it comes to the point where they're like, hey, can you take this girl home? Because other girl is hooking up with Chris. So,
right.
Can you take her home in a cab because she's too drunk to get home by herself?
And of course, he's very, reluctant to do it, but he agrees because she's a slobbering mess and she's like falling on the floor. So he's like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
So he pours her into a cab. He gets into the cab with her and he says, just take her home. Like, where do you live? She says her address. The cab driver, who's played by another comic, Felipe Esparza, I think he's like a comic in like Texas or something. He hears the address and he's like, oh, whoa, that's really far out. Like, I'm going to need money up front for that.
Yeah.
So of course this MC who doesn't have much money is like, all right, I'll pay whatever.
Because you don't pay till the end of the weekend, so he doesn't have any money from the gig yet.
Yeah, so this has all come out of his pocket, which is not good. You're starting to red already. It's not great.
Yeah. And the implication I think is that they drive like 45 minutes. They drive like out to the boonies. They're on a dirt road. They end up at this trailer.
Yeah.
And she's such a sloppy mess that he's like, okay, I'm gonna get out of the cab to help her inside, but you stay here. I'm gonna have you take me right back to the club or back to the condo. And as soon as they're out of the cab, the cabbie takes off because he thinks the place is so sketchy.
I would probably do the same thing because that it looked really like a setup. Like I was about to get raped and robbed at that point.
It looks like, he is going to get mugged or something like that. And the cabbie takes off with his comedy notebook and his phone. So he's really stranded. He can't really even call for help.
Right. So basically he gets the girl in the trailer. He makes a call on her landline phone. asking for a cab to pick him up. And then the cab's, of course, like, it's 45 minutes. So he's like, fine, I guess I'll stay here. And, of course, she's getting drunk. There are guns around. And she's just wielding guns drunkenly, saying, oh, let's hook up. And
Yeah, she at one point points a gun at him and says, like, take your pants off or something like that.
As you do.
Yeah. So, they say romance is dead, but this movie proves that it is not.
Yeah. I mean, that's how my folks met.
Yeah. But then, shortly after, you hear the little whoop of a police car pulling up, and the woman goes, oh shit, it's my boyfriend. Quick, jump out the back window.
Yeah, things just go from bad to worse.
Yeah.
He hops out the window, gets out the side, he crawls underneath the trailer as the cop pulls up. The girlfriend meets the cop boyfriend outside, and it's like, hey baby, what's up? And of course the guy, he's ready for love just right there in the street.
Yeah, he's like, I had a really tough day. He's getting orally pleasured by his lady friend right in front of their trailer.
Yes, and while he's doing that, he has a shotgun, and he's just like shooting random like things, like glass jars and stuff while he's getting a blowjay out on this dirt road, which...
So he's a multitasker.
Yeah.
And the woman, at one point, she sees Will underneath the trailer, and she, like, sort of stops mid-action and leans out to him, and she just goes, "This could have been you."
And, yeah. You don't see the blowjob, but you see the motionings of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing it from his point of view under the trailer, so you're just really seeing her kneeling in front of the cop and his pants and underwear around his ankles. So explicit, but
right while he blasts a shotgun,
right,
an actual shotgun. It's not a metaphor for something.
Yes,
but yeah.
He's blasting.
Hey-o, am I right, guys?
So Will's like finally able to get away. We see him at like a bus stop, and he and a cab picks him up, and it's the same cabbie as earlier in the evening, and he returns his phone and notebook to him. Yeah. Thank goodness.
Yeah, and he's like, "Hey, sorry about that, man. You know, shit got crazy."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, that whole scene was like, wow, that's pretty Pennsylvania.
And Will is such a nice guy. He's just grateful that he has his phone and his notebook back. And he doesn't bawl the guy out at all for abandoning him before.
Yeah. So he gets home. It's the next day. It's Friday.
Mm-hmm. This is his first night.
First night! That's insane! First night!
So the next morning they have to get up bright and early for the morning radio show, the Friday Funnies.
Hey.
and Will, of course, is just, you know, filled with energy and ready. And, he, you know, he's done the show many a time. He's friends with the hosts. You know, he knows the drill.
Right. So, of course, on the way over there, we see Will telling the story about what happened last night to Chris and Ricky, the sound guy who's driving him over. And they're like, "Oh my God, that's insane, man. That's crazy." Mm-hmm. So then they get to the radio station. We see another comedian, Joe DeRosa, welcome into the studio. You know, of course, like you said, Chris knows the drill. He's done this 100 times before. Chris asks if Will can join him in. Will, of course, is all very new to this, and it's all like kind of a little overwhelming. He doesn't know exactly the rhythm of it. So then they go in to do the radio show. We see the Morning Zoo jocks played by three comedians, Russell Peters, Eliza Schlesinger, and another SNL alumni, Brooks Quelan.
Yes. Yes, who famously, when he was let go from the show, he tweeted out, "Fired from New York, it's Saturday night."
Yeah, if you're going to go out, that's a pretty funny way to go out.
It's a good line, right?
I like it. That's how I would do it. I don't know that. Another thing I liked about this, like this whole Morning Zoo thing, like how they kind of use like the tropes of, you know, wacky morning radio, like, you know, the bike horn and the, you know, like, "Oh, it's crazy in here. Awooga." And during all that time, we just see like Eliza and Brooke kind of staring at their phones a bunch of times, like doing other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, it really captured how inane morning radio is and how rote it is and how it's like the same from city to city.
I think at some points, like, you know, the guys love Chris, they love his energy. I think Will tries to get in a few jokes and they don't quite land with them.
Yeah, he's a little too esoteric. Like, you know, Chris does some solid stuff from Florida. Like, he tells Will before they go in, he's like, "Oh, you know, it's easy. You just do a couple lines from your act. You plug the show. Bing, bang, boom." And so, you know, Chris does some well-crafted lines about Florida. You're like, "Florida man." And then Will tries just kind of improvising a thing about Ponce de Leon, which just does not fly at all in the world of morning radio.
Well, they don't get Ponce de Leon references in the morning.
No, they don't seem to go for that in a big way. And then he makes another faux pas where he eats the host's eclair from the sponsor Randy's Donuts, I think they said it was.
Right.
And like, you know, right after he finishes the eclair, the host, Russell Peters, goes like, well, now I'm going to tear into that eclair I've been looking forward to for 45 minutes. And it's like literally the last thing in the box.
I mean, in his defense, that wasn't his fault. Like, he didn't know if it's there. No. And like, no one called dibs on it.
It's free game. Awesome. He wasn't there.
Yeah, and also, Will also makes another reference to Ohio, saying he's from Ohio. And, like, all the jocks are like, boo, Ohio's. Like, is there some rivalry between Pennsylvania and Ohio I didn't know about?
Oh, there's probably some sports rivalry, I would imagine.
It's like a New York-Boston thing?
I guess. Or like a, yeah, or like I don't a, know.
Like a Jersey Philly thing? Yeah, I guess. Guys, let us know. Like, is there like a Pennsylvania Ohio thing? Because I don't know. There was a bit of like Ohio sucks throughout this whole thing. And yeah. I've never been to Ohio, but you know, I've heard it's all right.
Yeah. So after they leave the studio, all the radio hosts start bashing Will. They're like, you know, hey, we love Chris. He's great. He's always welcome. We love him. He's wonderful. But you know, what was with that other guy? He wasn't funny. He didn't have anything. And he stole my eclair, and you know, and they encourage everyone going to the shows that weekend to heckle Will.
Yeah, like it was like as they were listening to the radio, I think Will was like, "Hey, can you just like turn that down or change the station, please?" And Chris was like, "Oh yeah," and of course he just turned up the volume.
Yeah,
because that's what comedians do.
They bash comedians.
Let's turn up the pain.
Yeah.
and Russell Peters' character, the DJ, just goes into Will. It's like, he's not funny. He has no future in comedy. He sucks. Like, we love Billy G. We love Chris. If you go to that show, go there for them and support them. But like, if the show starts at 8, you can go in like 8:15 and just totally miss Will's part. Like, or better yet, just go at 8 o'clock and just boo Will. Just straight up boo him.
Yeah.
And it's like, God damn, over an eclair? You going to do this?
So it's, so it goes about as badly as it could go for Will, which, of course, Chris and Ricky are finding hilarious.
It's a hoot. I was like, dude, just go buy a new eclair. What the flip?
He even offered to buy a new eclair. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Oh,
good. So anyway, we got the Friday shows, and Chris persuades Will to like doing some shots before the show. And he's like, well, you know, and it's Friday. So they were doing two shows on Friday, weren't they? Or was it only on Saturday they were doing two?
I think it was Saturday they were doing two.
Okay. So Will's like, hey, I should keep a clear head before the show. And Chris is like, nah, come on, do a shot. And yeah, not a good idea.
Not the best.
Not the best.
They had a rough time. There was also a scene where Chris and Will kind of meet up for lunch and talk beforehand, where I think Chris talked about how he's going to move out to L.A. and just go out and make it. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of also bad-mouthed Billy a little bit, saying, yeah, he was good in his day, but like now he just kind of does the same thing over and over again. He's a bit of a dinosaur.
Yeah, you know, yeah. You get the impression from what Chris says that Billy is basically just like living off the past. Like he still does like all those old lines from his act, and you know, and that's what the people are still paying to see. So that's what he does. But he's not really moving forward as a comedian.
Yeah, like he kind of leaning on the catchphrase and who he was, and mm-hmm. that's enough to get him by, type of vibe.
Right. So during the Friday show, Will's heckled during the show, doesn't really know how to handle it. Like people are chanting, Ohio sucks.
Yeah. That really rattles him. And I'm like, oh, where did that come from? Cause that's another thing. People don't know about, like when somebody yells at you and heckles you, like from the stage, you really can't see who it was just cause it's so bright on stage and so dark out there. It really is just like somebody in from the darkness, the shadows, is heckling it. You don't know where to look or where to turn, or like it really can throw you off.
And it's disorienting also just because it throws you out of your train of thought. You know, you're thinking like, okay, well, I'm doing this joke and then I'm moving on to this thing and this. And so it really does break your concentration. And yeah, and most experienced comedians, they do have like a few go-to lines for hecklers, you know?
That's very true. So, yeah. But, you know, of course, Will has no experience with hecklers, so he just, it throws him off, but he doesn't address it, and he kind of goes on with his act, and he...
Yeah, which again, it's a bad thing, because then you've basically lost control of the show.
Right. Again, MC is a very important thing. They are in control of the show. Like, all comics, like, it's basically like when you're up on stage, like, you're the pilot of the plane, and the audience is, like, the passengers, so it's, like, your job to get this plane in the air and land it safely.
And right. Like, and like, you know, you want to, when you handle a heckler, you want to shut them down quickly and definitively because you're taking control back from the heckler. If you don't do that, if you don't shame them into shutting up, basically they will continue.
Right. They're like, oh, this guy's not saying anything. He's not, he has no comebacks. Well, I guess I can just keep going on with my nonsense then. And then that's when problems arise.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he didn't have a comeback for that heckler, he did notice that a girl was on her phone during the show, and he actually kind of riffed on that a little bit, and he kind of made it funny.
Yeah, he like grabs the phone from her, he talks to the person that she's talking to, and he's like, you know, hey, you, and then he gets another person on the phone, and it's a funny, spontaneous moment, and it really shows that, yeah, He's a good comic when he just gets out of his own head and he's just in the moment.
Right, absolutely. All right, so the show, like, aside from that little hiccup, the show pretty much goes okay without a hitch. He sees Billy again after the show, you know, taking pictures with people, signing autographs. Mm-hmm. I think he asks him at one point if he can, like, take him out to lunch or so. Oh, no, he asks him if he can take him out to lunch before the show, and Billy was like, no, I don't want to go to lunch with you. But then I think Billy saw that riff he did with the phone, and that endeared him a little bit. So then after he saw that, Billy was like, all right, if you want to meet for lunch, I'll be here at 12. Come out and we'll have lunch.
Yeah.
Right.
He's earned some comedy.
Yeah, he's earned a little bit of cachet with him. Uh-huh. And then they started talking about the craft of comedy, like, you know, Will talks about, it was the thing me and my dad really bonded over. You know, it got us through, you know, some times with, you know, the tough times after my mom passed away. And, you know, Billy kind of offers some sage advice saying, you know, you need to respect the audience, do the work, just always be funny. Stay, you know, just say stuff that makes you laugh, you know, try to find your voice. And once you find your voice, your audience finds you, you know, things like that, like encouraging words. For the young William.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, you're right for yourself. You find your voice and your audience will find you. And he says, that's when you're a comedian. It's not like when you're a headliner or anything like that. It's when you're speaking from the heart.
Right. That's right. Say from the heart, man. So then, Will takes that to heart and he thinks, oh, okay, maybe I should say more personal stuff and maybe, write some more personal jokes. So then the Saturday show comes up, and this is
right.
This was. Let's get into this. So
At first, when he shows up at the club, he's like, you know, hey, can I run? He says to Chris, Alex Moffat's character, he says, hey, can I run some new jokes by you? I want to try some stuff during the show tonight. And Chris is like, no, you don't try new jokes on a Saturday. You do that on a Thursday or a Sunday because those are quieter nights, and you can be more free to experiment more. Saturdays, you know, you want to do your go-to material.
Yeah, that's a great point. But Will decides to try out his new stuff, and does not go well. A few things happen. Again, somebody shouts out "Ohio sucks" to him. Of course, again he gets frazzled and doesn't know how to deal. He doesn't address it at all. He just kind of goes on with his act, and he tries out the new stuff. The stuff that hasn't been tested yet, the stuff that hasn't been fleshed out yet. And surprise, surprise, it does not go over well.
It doesn't work. It doesn't appear like the audience can't follow his train of thought. He's talking about, like, oh, you know, if I'm a city, I'm Seattle. And he means, like, you know, because I'm gloomy and rainy all the time or something. But the audience doesn't really get what he's doing. So he has to kind of explain the joke after. Oh, it's just painful.
As someone who has bombed on more than one occasion, it's the worst feeling ever. Like, I bombed with
Oof. It's many more times than one, Darren. Let's.
Hey. I mean, you're not wrong, but hey.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But yeah, and then of course the hecklers hit him even harder, saying, "Oh my God, get off the stage! You're terrible. Please just go back." I think at one point he mentions, "Oh yeah, I have a girlfriend back in Ohio," and somebody mm-hmm. said, "Oh, please go back to your girlfriend in Ohio. You're terrible."
Yeah, and, yeah. Like, so, I mean, it goes about as badly as it could possibly go. So after he gets off stage, the manager says, like, okay, this is your second strike. The radio show was the first strike because you made the club look bad. And this is your second strike. So I'm cutting your time from 12 to 5 minutes for the next show.
Right. And then we also have another comic who wants to sort of pop in and work on some stuff for their upcoming Tonight Show performance or appearance. It's this comedian, Brooke Bailey, played by Whitney Cummings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we see that, like, she knows Chris, she knows Billy G, and she's like, oh, yeah, I just want to try out some stuff and work out the set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, we'll ask how you would be.
Yeah, and that is a thing in comedy, too. Like, if you're in any kind of comedy market, especially, like, if you're a big market like New York or, I'm assuming, L.A., you will occasionally have a famous comedian who drops in and just says, like, hey, can I get a little stage time? I'm working on something. And then the club owner will let them go up just because, yeah. You know, they want to maintain good relations with these big names. And, you know, when you're a big name, you can't really go to an open mic the way comedians at our level do. So
right.
This is the thing that happens.
And, yeah.
And, like, I mean, one time I went into the show or I went into the city for a show, and I went to a club in the city, and Jim Gaffigan dropped in, which was great because, you know, you get to see Jim Gaffigan. But then they were like, oh, we're going to cut your set down to, I think it was like 3 minutes or something like that, where it was just like, well, why should I even bother going up?
I could be in a trailer with a drunk woman and her guns right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You want to just get to that part.
but yeah, that happens all the time in New York, LA. I'm sure it happens in other cities. I'm trying to think if I ever saw, if I was ever at a show that had like a surprise drop in. I don't think it's ever happened, but like it does. It definitely happens a lot. Especially Gaffigan has been known. He's been notorious for like dropping in on shows to, so especially in New York, to like, you know,
yeah,
pop in and do
surprise. And just to clarify, I was not mad at Jim Gaffigan. I mean, that's, you know, that's what he does. That's what he has to do. That's, I was just mad at the circumstances. And you know, if I hadn't, like, you know, spent the money and the time to go into the city from Jersey, it wouldn't have pissed me off at all, really. But
Trumbull, don't walk it back now. Air your grievances with Jim Gaffigan right here and now.
Okay. Well, you know, we'll have Jim Gaffigan on the show at some point, and he and I can finally work out our differences.
Yeah. Duke it out.
Yeah. But no, I've met Jim Gaffigan a couple times, and he is a very nice guy.
Yeah, he's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so back, Will Chu asks Whitney Cummings, you know, Brooke, quote unquote Brooke Bailey, how do you want to be brought out? She says, oh, just let him know I'm, you know, I have a Tonight Show set coming up this Thursday, and you know, I'm trying out some stuff. And he's like, all right, cool. Goes back out on stage, same thing. People chanting Ohio sucks at him. He has no comeback for that.
Yeah.
He
tries to do crowd work. It bombs. I mean, he's just like, you know, he sees two women sitting on the front row, and he's like, hey, mother and daughter. And they're like, yeah. And he's like, oh, and where's your husband? And they're like, he's not with us. And he's like, oh, is he like, you know, fishing or doing that? And they're like, no, he's dead. So.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh yeah, my dad's dead too. And, you know, that sucks.
Yeah, so he just doesn't really know how to roll with this. He doesn't know how to read the people well enough. So and really, it's like anything in stand-up. There is an art to doing crowd work, and I've seen some great people with crowd work. You know, our friend Adam Lucidi is one of the best people with crowd work I've ever seen. He's always solid as an MC.
Shout out to Adam.
He moved out of state a few years ago. And we don't get to see him too much anymore, but still love him.
Yes, we love you, Adam. But yeah, like, so we see Will up there floundering, like, no one's laughing at anything. People are chanting Ohio sucks. At one point, I think Will says he tries to riff off something in his mind, saying, hey, improv. You know, that if you break it down, that's like saying I'm pro with a V.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he doesn't deliver it with any kind of confidence, and so it's just nope. Cricket. And
so he gets the light immediately.
He's literally like, when you get the light as a comedian, they have a light in the back of the club, and when they light up, that's telling you you've got, like, you know, 2 minutes to get off stage. And running the light when you go past your time, that is considered a big faux pas, and that will not endear you to the club owners.
Right, because you're basically eating into the time of another performer who could really use that time. So, so, like, if you get lit early, that kind of means – that can mean a few things. That can mean, like, you're doing really badly, or somebody else who's more important wants to come up. But either way, he's lit very early, saying, get off the stage, bring up Brooke. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he does that. It's like, here's surprise comic, Brooke Bailey. You know, she's going to be on Tonight Show this Thursday, Brooke Bailey. Of course, she goes up and, you know, say, give it up for Will, give it up for Will Chu. And of course, Will is, like, totally dejected, and he ate it out there. He ate a whole big pile of poo, and he knows it.
Yeah. And so he's pretty down on himself. And then the manager, Chip, says, hey, don't bother coming back for Sunday. He's just like, I've given you chances, you've flubbed it. You're just not ready for this. The stand-up comedy is not for you.
And, he gets really bummed out. He leaves the improv, leaves the show. His name on the marquee, still misspelled.
Still misspelled. He couldn't bother to correct it because he's not any kind of name. And just when you think things can't get any worse, he's approached by a cop on the street. He's like, hey, are you Will Chu? And he, like, gives him his address, and he's like, are you the guy who talked on the radio about, like, you know, that thing that happened on Thursday? And
the cop, played by Tom Segura.
Tom Segura, yes, another stand-up comedian. I know, it's shocking. Another part in this movie played by a stand-up comedian. It's a big combo breaker. I get it.
And, of course, he's like, he confronts him saying, hey, you, like, I was wondering why there were two beers open at that trailer with my girl. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Tom, the cop, punches him in the face.
Yeah, and he says, like, don't tell anyone this because they'll never believe you, and I do this shit all the time. Which, just a little terrifying note in the middle of this movie about stand-up comedy.
Blue Lives Matter, everybody. Oh boy.
Tom Segura's cop character, he's got a few issues to work through, I think.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
So
the next Sunday he goes back to the cafe where he had lunch with Billy G the day before, and Billy G encourages him a bit. He's like, you know, hey, you know, the great thing about stand-up comedy is you get to be better the day than you were the day before.
Yeah, you get to do a do-over, because at this point, Will is totally dejected. He's really thinking about just quitting and just not doing it. He's like, maybe I don't have what it takes. Maybe I suck. I don't know. And I think Billy at some point is like, well, you just had one bad show. Yet you bombed. Everybody bombed. So if just one bomb is enough for you to think about not doing this anymore, then get the hell out. Get the fuck out.
Yeah.
Which is tough talk, but I like it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really shows that you really do have to develop a thick skin to do comedy. You can't be too discouraged. And you do have to remember, like, you know, if a show doesn't go well, okay, well, it's just one show.
Yeah. I mean, the next show will be full of people who didn't see the last show. So it's a clean slate.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and that's enough to get Will to really think about it and try it again. So he's practicing his set in the park. He's writing up comebacks for the Ohio Sucks people, because you know, they already did it two nights in a row, so we figured, well, they're probably going to do it tonight, so I better some.
And he gets a very in the arsenal. He gets a very nice encouraging message from his girlfriend. You know, he kind of tells her, "Hey, you know, it hasn't been going so well," but she's like, you know, "Hey, you're going to do this. You're talented, and you can do this."
Absolutely. So like he. You know, he got knocked down. He gets back up again. You're never going to keep him down.
Hey, that's catchy.
Right?
That's catchy.
Drinks a whiskey drink. Drinks a vodka drink. Drinks a lager drink. Drinks a sad drink. I forget the rest.
Does he sing a song at any point?
Yeah. These are pretty good lyrics. I might make a song.
Does the song remind him of, like, say, Good Times? Or even The Best Times?
Oh, Tanny boy.
Yeah. Good luck getting that out of your head, folks. After Will does all this prep, he goes back to the club and he goes to Chip and he begs for a last spot to finish out the weekend. And Chip takes sympathy on him and he says, "Okay, yeah, I'll let you go up."
Right, basically, like, look, just give me this one night. Let me finish it out. If I suck, you know, I'll never bother you. You'll never hear from me again. Mm-hmm. So it's like, all right, I'll let you up. And Sunday night, big crowd for a Sunday. But yeah,
it's like they cut to like crowd going like around the block, and I'm like, this is on a Sunday, really?
It's a Memorial Day weekend. What's going on here? So he goes up there, you know, he goes into his material, he does some new stuff, you know, which it's a Sunday, so he could do new stuff, and then the new stuff actually goes over well, and of course the people are there, of course, to chant "Ohio sucks" at him again, like he was expecting. Yeah.
But he turns it around, he leads the crowd in a chant of "Ohio sucks," and then he goes into, like, some new jokes. About, you know, how Ohio sucks, which is kind of cool. You know, that's good. I mean, he's taking the power back.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Ohio? Does it really suck that much, or is it just like a Pennsylvania thing?
I think I've only briefly been to Ohio. I have not spent enough time there to say whether or not it does suck.
Okay.
So I don't know. Sorry. But he has a good line. He talks about how the Wright brothers were from Ohio, John Glenn from Ohio, and Neil Armstrong were all from Ohio. And he says, this proves one thing. Men will do anything to get out of Ohio.
Yeah, and it's working, and people like it. He shut down the hecklers. We see, like, Billy and Chris kind of look at him with, like, this kind of like, oh, this is like a new Will. He's like, he seems like he's getting his shit together.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, a little boy's all grows up.
And he also does some more personal material in his set. He talked about his dad dying and all that. But you know, it's funny material. So yeah, so he does a nice job. I thought it was a little unclear if he was getting like a 12-minute set or if he was just doing another 5-minute set.
Yeah, that's true.
Because of course you're not seeing the full sets. They're collapsing time a bit because
right.
You know, if they were showing everybody's full set, it would just be a concert film.
I mean, my thought is like maybe he gave him the 5, but then he saw he was doing well, so he's like, all right, let him stay up there a little bit longer. So maybe he didn't.
I mean, who knows? I don't know. It's a minor thing, but it was just like the one thing I was a little unclear on.
No, I hear you. But yeah, he got through the night. He got to the shows, and he did well. He got his mojo back, baby.
He finished out the weekend strong. Then we see him like after the show. He goes into Chip's office to settle up to get his check for the weekend. And you know, he thanks Chip again for giving him another chance. And then Chip looks at his calendar on the wall and he says, "Hey, I need an MC in 2 weeks in Kansas City. You know, are you free?" So he's got the vote of confidence for Chip. He's got Chip back on his side.
Right. And he says, yeah. And he says, great, that you're on. And he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we cut to Marquee, the improv in Kansas City. He's opening for Dave Attell, the great. They don't show Dave Attell, but you see his name, Attell. You see his name spelled correctly on the marquee.
Dave Attell.
Yeah, well, Dave Attell and Will Chu.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, his right. name was spelled correctly as well. Yes, I noticed that. Yeah,
exactly.
But I was also impressed they spelled Dave Attell's name correctly. So.
That is a tricky one. Like, how many T's, how many L's?
It's tricky.
You got to look into
it. It's tricky to rock a rhyme that's right on time. It's tricky.
Sir, I did not expect you to know a Run DMC lyric like that. I bravo. I thought you were just way too white for that. I'm
sorry. No. White people are required to know at least a couple Run DMC lyrics.
In case of an emergency?
Yeah. No, we go over them at the meetings.
God, I may have to bust out King of Rock in case things go awry.
So, and that's it. So you really get the feeling that Will is going to make a go of it at the stand-up comedy. He's taking the lessons of that weekend to heart, and he's going to make it after all.
Yeah, like he goes up on stage, ready to start the show. We see his girlfriend's in the audience. She says hello, and like he's taking his first steps as to being a professional comedian,
a working comedian. Yeah,
yeah, and then the movie ends, and. I dug this movie. It wasn't perfect. There were still a few things here and there that could have been fleshed out a little bit more. Like I kind of thought maybe they would go into, like, you know, his background with his dad dying and his mom dying and maybe, you know, the impact on that. They kind of touched on it a little bit, but I thought it'd play a bigger part. And the whole thing with the girlfriend really didn't. I don't know. It wasn't like a huge factor.
She doesn't figure into it in a big, big way. I think the only real factor she has in the plot outside of being encouraging is that, you know, she's the reason that he doesn't want to mess around with the skanky girl in the trailer.
Right. That's her name in the credits. But overall, I dug this movie as a comedian, as somebody who loves comedy. This kind of, you know, plucked at my heartstrings, and I was like, oh yeah, stand-up comedy. Oh, I miss it.
Yeah, I really liked it. It's I don't know if it would be too inside baseball for non-comedians, but as a comedian, I really enjoyed it, and I feel like they got a lot of stuff right. I mean, because, you know, Steve Burns been a comedian for a long time. He knows what the life is like. It's not, you know, it's not like a movie like say Punchline, that Tom Hanks Sally Field thing, where like I tried watching that a few years ago. Like, because I'd seen it before, long before I'd ever become a comedian. I think it came out in like 88, 89, something like that. And when I tried watching it a few years ago, I was like, oh, okay, well, they get a few things right. They get other things wrong.
Yeah, that whole thing with the lockers was like a big, like, people, a lot of comics had a problem with that. Like,
they never had a locker room at any venue.
Like, it's like a high school gym. It's like, you know, there's no lockers. What the fuck?
I didn't get what that was about.
But I think this
was really good. I think this is one of the better movies about stand-up comedy that I've ever seen. So
yeah, I mean, there are tons of like movies about stand-up comedy that a lot of comedians say they don't get it right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like Funny People or I don't know what else. Or maybe like the Lenny Bruce movie or.
I've never seen the Lenny Bruce movie. I need to check that out. I understand it's kind of mixed, but
Or even like a show like Mrs. Maisel. Like people say, oh, that's kind of like what it's like. But yeah. I feel like this was a pretty good, or even like the TV show Crashing. But I feel like this was a good representation of like what comedy is.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah. I think this is probably my favorite out of the ones I've seen. I found the interview with Steve Byrne on geektyrant.com, and he talks a little about the movie. He says, you know, at all three characters in the film are me. I was Will Chu. I certainly was Chris Palmer. And at this point in my life, I am Billy G. And those are all based off of conversations I've had over the years. I've listened to them over the years, and I'm having them now. Now that I'm kind of a veteran on the road, especially, there's a lot of comics who say, can I go out to lunch with you? Or can I pick your brain? Or can I talk to you in the green room before and talk about how you started? And you know, it almost becomes nauseating after a while, but you just say, you know, I was that kid. And you know, I have those conversations on almost a weekly basis. And there was a comedian, I won't say his name, but he came to one of these screenings and he said, I had that conversation with you just a few months ago. Is that why you put that in there? And I was like, no, unfortunately, that's a common conversation.
So I discerned a lot of knowledge from comics. And that line in the film that says, when I was younger, I thought I had to make people laugh so that I could feel good. But now I know I make people laugh so that they feel good. That's the line from Billy Gardell, from Mike and Molly, and now Bob Hart's Abishola.
I actually
named the character Billy G after Billy Gardell because he's been such a mentor to me over the years. I have nothing but high regard for him. And that line stuck with me like an incredible melody, like your favorite song. It's just been in my head over the years. When I was writing this, I was like, that's going in the fucking script. So So that's where the name Billy G comes from. It's Billy Gardell.
Interesting. Wow, that was beautiful. I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. And he also just talks about stand-up comedy in general. He says, like, you know, for every joke that works, there are usually 10 jokes that haven't. So when you see an hour stand-up comedy, you see every joke that works. You think of all the jokes that didn't work to get there. So
yeah. There's a lot of fat, just like trimmed fat, just like lying around in people's notebooks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think when I was first starting stand-up comedy, I messaged with Eugene Merman a little bit because I knew him from Invite Them Up. I was sort of friendly with him. And he gave me, like, I think probably the best piece of advice I've ever heard, which was time and audiences will tell you what you need. And, you know, you just have to trust in audiences. If they don't laugh at something, they're probably right. I mean, they don't lie. Laughing is like one of the most honest things you can do in the world. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing that, I mean, that's part of the high that we get from doing it as comics. Like just our words, just the way we say something or what we say causes this involuntary reaction out of somebody.
Yeah,
that just brings them all this happiness and joy, and that's like, oh, I did that. Like that's a powerful feeling.
It really is a powerful feeling, and it's that high that gets you, that keeps you going through the rougher times or the bad shows or whatever. I mean, there is nothing like it.
Oh, it is quite the ride, my friend. Quite the ride.
And you know, something I really liked is at the end of the closing credits, they have a lot of the comedians who have parts in this movie talking about their early days and bombing and the struggles that they went through. And I really enjoyed that. I mean, it just shows that everybody comes from somewhere, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, everybody has a story. Everybody worked a job they hated before they made it. Or, like, everybody's bombed. Everybody's gone through some really garbage things on the road to this big dream they have. Like, you know, we've all gone through it. It's something else.
Yep. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, yeah, so we recommend this film, the opening act.
Yeah, check, yeah, thumbs up. It's on Amazon Prime, definitely worth checking out, especially if you're into stand-up comedy as we are.
Yes. Yeah, and Alex Moffat really good in this role too. I don't know if it's a star-making role, but it's definitely some. It's a role that shows he can do some stuff. He can really.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing a guy that I presume is not very much like himself, or, you know, maybe he was like that at one point, but he's this single guy who's like, a few times in the movie he's like, people are saying, like, oh, hey, last time I saw you, you were with this incredible blonde. And he like, doesn't even remember the woman they're talking about because he hooks up so much with audience members and stuff. So,
yeah, I believe the term poonhound is.
There was another moment I really liked where Mike Chu is talking with Ricky, the sound guy. And Ricky's, like, offering him various drugs. He's like, oh, so, Are you hanging out after the show? Do you want to, like, you know, smoke some weed? Do you want to do some blow? Do you want some pills? Do you want to do this? And Will, who's like fairly straight edge, he just at one point just says, Ricky, I feel like I'm not a great hang for you. Yeah, it was so dry. I loved it. It was great.
I think at one point he said, hey, is everything okay at home?
Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, you'll find a fair amount of screw-ups or people who are spiraling in stand-up comedy as well. So,
but
you also meet some great people that, you know, eventually you might host a podcast with or something.
Yeah. Hey, we're hosting a podcast. Are you talking?
I'm talking hypothetically.
I see. All right. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. And fine. And yeah, that's our episode, guys. Check out the opening act. And yeah, so Johnny T, what are we doing next week? What are we doing tomorrow night, Brain?
What are we doing next week? Next week we had some discussion. Next week is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is happening next week. We thought, should we do a Thanksgiving theme thing? Or is there anything else out there that is like kind of big in the world of Saturday Night Live?
Is there anything else in the, I don't know, I can't think of anything.
And then we said, hey, there's a new documentary about one of the most famous cast members of SNL ever, of all time. It's a documentary called Belushi that is premiering on Showtime, I think the night we are recording this.
Yes, tonight on November 22nd, 9 p.m. Well, I mean, by the time you guys listen, it'll already be out. But yeah. if you have Showtime, yeah, the documentary Belushi will be out. And yeah, we're going to do an episode all about that. It'll hopefully be a lot better than the episode of Wired we did so many years ago.
Yes. So check that out. If you don't have Showtime, you can get a free weekend or something like that, and you can sample that and check it out. Oh, and you know what? Something I got to backtrack a little bit to opening act. Something I almost forgot to mention. Check out the IMDb trivia page for the opening act, because apparently every bit of trivia on there was left by Tom Segura. The first one is just, the car wash sequence was filmed at Falcon Car Wash in New Mexico, where dental work was additionally provided by the owner. There is no car wash sequence in the movie.
Like the first time I saw that, I was like, "Hey, wait a minute, is this a put on?"
And they just get increasingly weird. Tom Segura keeps his jeans high and tight in real life, and always has. Nobody has higher or tighter jeans in comedy than Segura, who once beat Steven Seagal in arm wrestling.
I mean, it's on the computer, so it must be a fact.
And then I like this one. I think this might be my favorite. Tom Segura only agreed to the role if moose soup was served on set every day.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
It's quite the delicacy. It's.
And then Tom Segura declined a role in this film several times. It was only until director Steve Byrne told him to, quote, try it out, that he would reconsider and take the role.
Yeah, so Tom Segura had some fun with this.
Yeah. I think it's just, if you wanted to see Tom Segura just trolling Steve Byrne, go check out the trivia page on IMDb for the opening act.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. Maybe you can try to add some things yourself. Have fun, you know. The only limit is your imagination.
I'd love to see the other comedians in this movie do this. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, there are nothing but comics in this movie, so like they could all add one thing.
Exactly. I want to read some fake trivia about Bill Burr or Roy Wood Jr. or whoever.
Yeah, what was it? Roy Wood Jr., yes.
Roy Wood Jr. is what I was saying.
Okay, got it.
I was swearing a bit. I drink a lot.
Oh boy. Wow. It is Sunday night. So
yeah. So anyway, join us next week. We will be covering the documentary Belushi. In the meantime, please follow the show page on Twitter and Instagram. We are at SNL Nerds Show. I am at on Twitter and Instagram at Trumbull Comic.
And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible. D-A-R-I-N Credible.
Yes, and please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts of choice. And please support the show. Go to our Patreon at nonpro.com.
Absolutely, rate, review the whole Megillah, as the kids say.
The whole Megillah gorilla.
That's right. Yeah, that's what the kids are saying. I'm putting it out there.
That's right. We're getting that started.
Right. We're bringing it back.
We're bringing it back. All right. I think that is it for us for this week. So until next week with Belushi, nerds out.
Nerds out.
Nerds out.
Nerds out.
Nerds out.
Nerds out.
Okay, now we're just saying stuff for no reason.
Now we're just vamping.
Yep.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.